Good. So we're going to begin looking at Rabbi Yoshi with Chelek Aleph, which is the first Chelek of Tshuva. And Tshuva, specific Tshuva, which was interesting to me, is Simon Yud Ches in Chelek Aleph. And this was a Tshuva written to the Kal of the Rebbe, Kal of the Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. He's still alive today. He should be Maruch Yomim. And was a very, very Choshva and holy person. And he said, the Kal of the Rebbe suggested that Am Yisrael, this is in 1985, should accept upon themselves as a mass takana to accept all Malchus Shamayim by saying the Psukim of Shema Yisrael every day after the davening of Aleinu, after Aleinu Shabbat and davening, which of course is the end of davening according to the Sefer. And this is important. He said that the kavana they should have when they're saying this is to unite, unite with the Kedoshim, the holy ones, the 6 million who were killed during the Holocaust. So this is an effort to try and memorialize the Holocaust. So the Rabbi Yoshiv says, in his tshuva, he says, listen, you know, I know that you went through the Holocaust. Rabbi went through the Holocaust and he was tortured by the Nazis. And obviously, you cannot forget what went on there and distract yourself from remembering all those things. But you asked me my opinion, so I'm going to give you my opinion. And he says, after the Holocaust, there was a question whether to set up a tiny seber for all generations on the destruction of Am Yisrael, and the Chazon Ish was completely against this. That's well known. The Chazon Ish was opposed to setting up a commemoration day for the Holocaust. And he said the way he expressed himself, Chazon Ish, is that our generation, there is our generation, which is best that it remains silent, is not worthy to set something up for generations. So the Chazon Ish had this very interesting approach, which is that you have to be worthy in order to tamper with the calendar. And we are not worthy of tampering with the calendar. So therefore, we cannot set up a day, to specific day, to commemorate the Holocaust. It's interesting that Rabbi Soloveitchik was of the opinion that not only can't we tamper the calendar, we can't even tamper with the davening. He was against kinos for the Holocaust. He held that only Rishonim can write kinos. We cannot write kinos in our day and age. So he was against doing in our generation this kind of thing. But besides that, says Rabbi Yoshiv, also your nusach, the Kal of the Rebbe, who says your expression, to be one with the holy ones, I don't know a source for this from Chazal. So what Rabbi Yoshiv is saying here is very powerful. I don't know if it's very powerful, but it reveals something about him, which is the Kal of the Rebbe is a very emotional person, obviously, and he wants to do something emotional to commemorate the Holocaust. Rabbi Yoshiv says, I feel for you, but it has to have a source in Chazal. Without a source in Chazal, even though this is not something which is halachically an issue, would seem. What difference does it make? Say Shema Yisrael, not say Shema Yisrael. No, in order to do something permanent, and it has to be something which we are worthy of doing, which we're not, and B, it has to be something which has a source in Chazal. Sentiment has no place. And he suggests something else. He says that it would be appropriate to be mechazik, that which already is done in a lot of places, it's that after davening, they learn mishnayos in the Ilui Nishmas, the Kedoshim, who didn't have any children to say Kaddish or memorialize them. So learning is always good. So learning for the Kedoshim, that's fine, but to make something which is a ceremony, something which is a takana of some sort, even something which seems to be very, very simple and non-halachically, not a, a great halachic issue, Rabbi Yosef says no. That was the first tshuva which I found interesting. Now, there are a few more which I wanted to do. Let's go to the second one. The second one is a similar one, and it's talking about a monument in a cemetery. In other words, you have also the same thing for the Holocaust. You have people who have no grave.
What sefer is it in?
This is Rabbi Yosef's tshuva, Kovetz Tshuvas it's called.
Okay.
We don't know who asked the question here, but he's talking about somebody who asked him a question about setting up a monument for his parents who were killed in the Holocaust on an empty plot in a cemetery. And you set up such a monument, an empty plot in a cemetery. Okay? So he says, what's involved here? Halachically, he says, we have halacha that we don't follow chukos hagoyim, and we don't resemble them in any way. And this is talking about, the Ramah says, and you're there, Simakup HaYiches, it's something which goyim have done for pritzus, which is obvious, that's why it's also to wear red, or for something which they took upon themselves as a minuk v'chok vein tam b'dover, as a custom and a ritual, let's say, which has no intrinsic reason for it. Because then we have to be concerned that perhaps is a form of religious superstition, as he calls it, dark emori, something which they do for a beneficial purpose, and something which they do because of honor or some other reason, that's okay. So that seems to be aside to make this permissible, because this is something which is done for honor, right? But then he brings down the Gra. The Gra proves from the Sugya Sanhedrin that even something which has a reason has a problem of a chukosayam lo selechu. But even if it has a reason which is for honor or for some other purpose, as long as it's not directly advantageous for a people, it's not permissible. So he says to set up monuments of stone, wood, and stone for people who fell and are missing and have been lost. This they learned from the nations of the world, who get aroused, then respoil from these types of matzavos, from these types of memorials, and therefore he says, since it's learned from the non-Jews, so therefore, according to the Gra, even if they have a reason for their custom, it's forbidden to be like them. So he's clear to say the idea that perhaps it is a Jewish notion, and we find by Avshalom that Avshalom set up for himself a monument in his lifetime, in which is, we think it's what's called Yad Avshalom, although I don't think we know for sure, in the Hanhara Zeisim, even during his lifetime, because he said he has no son to commemorate him, so therefore he wants to have this monument. So the Gra says that if something is written in Tanakh, it's not considered to be chukos hagoyim. So therefore, perhaps the monument could be permitted for the source in Tanakh. Now, he says there's another issue here. The other issue here is, can he use the ground of a cemetery? What's the status of the ground of a cemetery? So he says a cemetery in a city has the halacha of a shul, is that it belongs to everybody. So, and therefore, it's once it's set aside for the purpose of burial, so it has a status of itzer hanah for any other purpose. Just like now, as we derive hanah from anything else which has to do with the mace, so too the beis hakoros, the cemetery, now allowed to derive benefit from it. So, according to this, he says perhaps since it's a graveyard which belongs to the masses and therefore can't be changed, right? If it belongs to an individual, it could be changed, right? But since this is not, so therefore it's public, so therefore perhaps you can't put up a monument because you're using the ground for a purpose for which it was not intended. Okay? So he wants to say that no, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where it says that there was a certain person who had grain which was mixed up with Yain Nesef, with wine, forbidden wine, and Rav Chisda said to burn it in the cemetery. So Rav Yosha says, well, maybe this is evidence you can use the cemetery for something else. But maybe not, because maybe it was a private cemetery, and therefore it could be used based on the owner's whim and will, but that wouldn't apply to a public cemetery. So the Shulchan Gemarim goes on and he says that, then he brings down that the other poskim also who permit the use of a cemetery for other purposes, that they don't regard it as being Aser Banoah, even though it was set aside for dead people, and therefore, says the Yashiv, halachically, you could say that this is okay, because you have A, the basis in Tanakh for the actual monument, and B, the poskim hold that you're allowed to use the cemetery for other purposes. But then that's the tshuva. Then he has a last paragraph, and then he says, even though there is room to deliberate according to Din Torah, according to Halacha, but according to Das Torah, which is obviously a separate thing, Ein Ruach Chachamim Noachim Mizeh. Chachamim are not pleased with such practices. And he says if relatives want to commemorate their loved ones and to do a kindness with the deceased, so you should suggest them that which has always been done in years past, instead of putting up a monument in a cemetery, to give a gift to a shul, a light fixture or something of that sort, which will bring advantage also to those who are alive, and also will uplift the neshama in that it will have commemoration in the Heichal Hashem in the shul. So it's a very interesting point here from Rabbi Yoshi, which is that it's not all halacha. In other words, besides halacha, there's also Da'as Torah. And Da'as Torah means that what our sensitivity should be to something. And it's interesting because really I think that what he said to the Kala of the Rebbe was also a Da'as Torah thing, not a Din Torah thing. It's hard to place a prohibition on something like saying Shema after davening. But Rabbi Yoshe is saying that this is not, if we look at what we see in Chazal and how we see Am Yisrael conducting itself throughout the ages, that is the primary concern. So in both these tshuvas, we see how Rabbi Yoshe, well, as you would expect from a Litvak, does not place an emphasis on emotion in any way, shape, or form. On the contrary, although he is sympathetic, but rather the even the spirit of the law has the capacity to override the emotion which people have brought to the table when they ask the question. So those are a couple of tools I wanted to see in the first volume. And I went to the second volume and I did not find anything which was particularly exciting to me, at least. So now
where was the last exact tshuva? Like, where is exactly the sefer?
Which one?
The last tshuva you just said.
I forgot to give you the Mara Mokum, right? Just a second. I had a place mark. Simon Kuflanik. 130 in Chela Kala. Okay? Now going to Chela Gimel. Third vine. So there are a few interesting tshuvas here. First of all, in Simon Chof Ches, 28. Now, this is a very short tshuva. He says, and again, this is a tshuva where the first two parts are missing. It starts from Oz Gimel. So we don't know who was written, what the context was, but the title of the tshuva is to exaggerate in story, in Gedolim stories. And Rav Yoshe writes, he says, to embed in a book stories on Gedolim and Tzadikim, things which never occurred, it's not proper to do that. And he says that the Taz writes in Yoredeya, in Simon Shindal Mem, and that was the Shulchan Aruch says, Mazkiring Midos Tovo Shalomos Simbohem Tzad. Interesting language. In other words, when you give a hesped, you mention the good Midos, which that person possessed, and you add a little bit, which is very strange. What does it mean, add a little bit? So that's what the Taz asks. Mali Sheker, Mali Sheker Ma'at, Mali Sheker Arbe. What's the difference between a little lie and a big lie? A lie is a lie. What's the difference? So he writes that, I'm not sure if it's going to Taz or this is, I think it's the way he thinks himself. He says, this is the gather. There's something where you can add something if one could assume that if something like this would have happened, this person would have done so and so. Like that, you're allowed to add. So it's a fascinating idea. So if you say that if you know the person, you can say, you can assume certain things about him, and therefore you can construct a praise of that person which is in sync with who he was and add that little bit. But you can't make stuff up completely. So, for example, let's say, hypothetically, what I would assume is the case is that you could say about a person that he who was a tremendous Baal Chesed, that he, you know, that he would have gone even further. You're sure he would have gone even further and done X, Y, Z. But you can't say about that person who's about Chesed that he mastered Shas at 3 years old. Conversely, perhaps if a person is the Vilna Gaon, then you could say about him that he mastered Shas at 3 years old, and what if he was 3 or 5? But you can't say about the Vilna Gaon, unless you know that that's the case, that he had an amiable relationship with every single person that he met, because we know that he was not particularly happy with Hasidim. So there, one has to take the direction in which things flow, and one can embellish a little bit on that. But one cannot take things against the direction in which they originally went. It's a very interesting idea. It really needs a lot more explanation. But it's fascinating the parameters which Rabbi Yoshev begins to propose in this tshuva. Okay, there are a few more tshuvas in this volume, which are three more. Which one is the next one, right afterwards? The Choftes, 29, which says, and this is about Lo Sosur. That was a fascinating tshuva. It's about history, not about the Gedolim stories, but about history. And it was here that it's written that the tshuva was issued to Reb Baruch Horowitz, who was Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Bar Yerushalayim, one of the early Kiruv Yeshivas in Yerushalayim. And he put out a book of the response, I think maybe other writings of his grandfather. His grandfather was Rabbi Marcus Horowitz, who was, interestingly enough, the Rav in Frankfurt of the non-Hirshian Kehila. We know that the Hirsch Kehila was the Auschwitz Gemeinde, the one that left the general community, and then there were those who stayed behind. And the Orthodox people, the majority, did not leave with Rav Shlomo Hirsch. And the general community provided a rabbi for them over the years, different rabbis. One of them was Rabbi Marcus Horowitz. So Rabbi Marcus Horowitz put tshuvas. One of them he discusses a very significant historical occasion, which I don't think I've spoken about ever specifically, which is the Cleaver Geth. The Cleaver Geth was, the town was Cleaver, and there was a fellow who gave a get there to his wife, and the Beis Din of Frankfurt ruled that he was insane, and that the get was invalid. And every other gadol in Europe, almost, opposed the Frankfurt Beis Din. including the Noida Behuda. So the Frankfurt Basin at the time retaliated. They did not give way on this. They retaliated by making a takana that no descendant of the Noida Behuda can ever serve as a rav in Frankfurt. That was why I always wondered if KAJ in Washington Heights was subject to this gezeira or not. But in any event, they made such a gezeira as a result of this issue. The ironic thing about those three, which went on for years, whether it's a good get, not a good get, is that in the end, this husband and this wife remarried each other. It's not said, we don't know if they lived happily ever after or not, but they at least were able to remarry. In any event, so Rabbi Marcus Horowitz, in his book, wanted to justify the position of the Frankfurt Basin, which makes sense, since he's in Frankfurt and he's one of their spiritual descendants. And he even expressed an opinion that not just that was Muhammad's close on them, but they were right. And their halacha, which was halacha says, which is in opposition to the majority of Am Yisrael, the Chachmei Yisrael at that time, was the grand position. Now he has a fascinating perspective on this, the reprinting of this issue.
Do you need to use it still?
He says, first of all, he says, at that time, the Frankfurt Basin was isolated.
Rebecca?
And it was an ordinary minority vis-a-vis the rest of the Israelis at the time. And says Rabbi Yoshe, were the Sanhedrin still around, and then the other Gdolim would have been the heads of the Sanhedrin, and the majority of the Sanhedrin, concerning with what it says, lo sasa midibrayim, that you should not depart from the words, even they tell you on right that it's left, and especially tell you that right is right. And it was certainly concerning them, even though there is no Isser of lo sasa in our day and age, even they, though you can't apply lo sasa to when there is no Sanhedrin, but we definitely have to say concerning them that Elokim Nitzav Ba'das Kel. God is among the community of God. And the Chas V'Shalom, they could not have made a mistake. So Rabbi Yoshe fascinatingly applies even later generations the idea of the authority which is vested in Chachmei Yisrael and the Siyata D'Shmaya that must attend Rov Chachmei Yisrael as a result. A fascinating idea. And but in any event, he says, look, let's not talk about that. But nevertheless, he said it. But nevertheless, from here, he says, to take a position in this machlokes, which is bad enough, what right you have to take a position, especially against the Gdolei Yisrael, but to do further what you did. And evidently, they printed up in this new sefer the pronouncements, you know, the stuff that they paste on the walls in Yerushalayim. I don't know where they pasted them back then in Frankfurt, but the pronouncements of a similar nature, which in the bans and protestations of the Frankfurt Basin, he reprinted all of that. So he says, I'm astounded what these pronouncements are doing in our Lachit Sefer. Pronouncements which are insulting to great giants, including, he says, the Merkavas HaMishnah, was one of the great Gedolim on that time, and concerning the original Rav in the side of the Get, Rabbi Yisrael, the Rav in Sliva, who was also a great Gog. So, and by the Shagasari effect, by the Divya effect, he was one of the greats of the generation. And one of those pronouncements, it says that he was Matir and Eshes Ish because he took a bribe. So he says, how do we deal with this? Granted, at the time, the Ida of the Rikha, when everybody's angry, when fire amach lekes, is rising high. So people exaggerate. But why do you want to put this in the Sefer? Is this covered out Sefer? That what they did at the heat of the moment is something which is necessary to it's for all generations to commemorate. And he says there's no doubt that after their hatred and their jealousy is already lost for many years and they're in the world of truth, that they are not happy that this is being said. Not just the people who are being said against, but the people who originally said it are not happy with this. And he says, even your grandfather, I don't think would have given us comment to put those pronouncements in, and you should not have put those pronouncements in. So, a few fascinating things in Shul, obviously. First of all, the quality of low salsa, which can apply even in our day and age. Secondly, that historically, something which can be assumed to be at the heat of the moment thing, one certainly should not put out law in favor. And the question is if it has any validity to publicize it at all. Now, of course, the people in the know will be in the know. They're always secular scholars who will print things without asking us. But Kavod HaTorah is something which should have a say, and Kavod HaTorah therefore means that if this is something which is ancient history, it's not worthwhile bringing it up again. Again, Shubas, which are dealing with very weighty matters, very, very much the kisser, but they are fascinating jumping off points for understanding Rabbi Yoshi. And another fascinating thing about Rabbi Yoshi is that he deals at many, many places with the status of non-Jews. And unlike you would expect, perhaps, from Rabbi Yoshi, he's pretty balanced on this issue and actually is, I would say, somewhat of a humanist. So, yeah, as I say, he speaks about many places. Many places. And by just saying one of the shortest places where he speaks about it, which is in Chela Gimel Simen Kuf Memalo, 141. And it's about a Ben Noach who learns Torah. And he brings down an Eri. When Eri says, and in fact, it's a fascinating Eri. When Eri says that a Ben Noach, that we saw him trying to be Mishaseh. He highlights the word mitzchasei. So I could be more pious, legitimately so. And he sets up for himself a Sabbath or a holiday which is worthy of punishment. And not just when he takes our holidays, like it says here, Goji Shabbat, a guy who kept Shabbat, that we punish him and we say to him, either accept the yoke of mitzvahs, or do not take upon yourself our customs. But even if he took other days, even let's say he decided Monday is going to be the yontif, we don't allow him to take a day and make a holiday and make a cessation of labor as a holiday is from our perspective. But that's about Shabbos and Yom Tovim. Says the Meiri. However, any other mitzvah, we do not curtail him from keeping it. As we know, there's interesting evidence that we accept the karbanos and tzedakah from non-Jews. And so too, if he learned Torah, not for the purpose of fulfilling it and its mitzvahs, but because his heart is curious. And he wants to know our Torah, then he should be punished. Why? Because people who think that he is one of ours, because they see him knowledgeable and learning, and they're going to make a mistake to follow him. But anybody who's involved in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and so that's his focus of learning, you give him honor as if he's a Kohen Gadol. And especially if his quest is to know to the extent that if he finds our Torah suitable, he's going to be Megayer, he will convert, and certainly if he's involved in fulfilling the mitzvahs of Lishma, even if they're not part of the Sheva mitzvahs, all that is okay. Miri is saying is fascinating, and this is how Rabbi Yashiv concludes the truth. Again, it's one of the shorter ones. He says that since it's here obvious that the Miri holds that since all other mitzvahs other than Yom Tovim, and this could go back to what the reason why he was against where he began, that to tamper with the calendar is something which only Jews can do and only at the right time and place in history. But it says, but all other mitzvahs, we don't bar him from fulfilling them. And he has a reward as somebody who is Eino Mitzvah Leise, somebody who's not going to do it and doesn't anyway, like the Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim. So they all have the Lach of Sheva Mitzvahs. Aye, so what does Chazal mean when they said specifically Sheva Mitzvahs? Because Chazal say, in the Gemara, they say, oh, a guy who learned Sheva, who focuses on learning Sheva Mitzvahs, but he's not. He's like a Kohen Gadol. But according to the Meiri, it seems like it's true about all mitzvahs, as long as they're not mitzvahs that have to do with the calendar. So says Rabbi Yoshi, very interesting. He says, Mash'omu Chazal b'Sheva Mitzvahs b'Zuhu, that which Chazal say, in their seven mitzvahs, it's only coming to exclude mitzvahs which do not apply in our day and age. In other words, mitzvah, you know, Chabad Chaim wrote a sefer mitzvahs that cost us, which deals with all the mitzvahs which were allowed, which we can fulfill nowadays, and we still are able to fulfill. So those mitzvahs, the non-Jew who wants to sit down and learn them b'iyun, you know, as sincerely, is like a Kohen Gadol. It only says Sheva Mitzvahs because Sheva Mitzvahs are always applicable to the non-Jew. So therefore, they're mentioned. But any other Mitzvah which you could do b'zman hazeh, that now, let's say, you know, Shiluach HaKen. So he wants to send away the mother bird, right? He doesn't have to. He's not one of the tariyad. But if he wants to fulfill Shiluach HaKen, and he learns Shiluach HaKen, b'yud rab, it's wonderful. But something like Korban Toida, which is not knowing by a non-Jew, and it's not knowing with Zman Hazeh, that he would not be able to, we are not allowed to focus on, because that has no advantage to him in terms of his chazdus, in terms of uplifting himself. So it's a very, very interesting perspective, which goes throughout the Sefer. Adam asks, what about Karbonos by Sukkot? It's a good question. No, because Karbonos by Sukkot, he can't bring. But Karbon Ola, which a Goy can bring, and by the way, a Goy can even bring a Karbon Ola b'Zman Hazeh, going to Reish Lakish. They're allowed to sacrifice their own sacrifices to Hashem outside the Beit HaMikdash, so therefore they would be allowed to learn that. But it's interesting, Rabbi Yosef has several Shuvahs in which he explains why you're not Mechal Shabbos to save a Goy. And he says, it's not because there's no din of a Chai Boy among a Goy. A Goy himself is allowed to be Mechal his Sheva Mitzvahs because of Pikuach Nefesh, which is not a simple thing. Rabbi Yosef says he's allowed to. But it's also, he says that this is because Shabbos is something which is unique to Jews. I don't want to get into it because it's a bit complicated what he says, but he's apologetic. He feels that this is something which needs explanation. Okay, now there's one other tshuva which I wanted to see with you tonight, and this goes back to the power of Chachamim in our day and age as well, which is Simon Reish Lamed Aleph in the third volume, 231, in which is written to the Five of Cohen, American Post-Sake, in 2004. And the question was, which is very much so again in our day and age, unfortunately, is if you know that an adult is molesting a child, can you tell the government? Can you go to the authorities concerning that issue? And he brings down a Rashba. The Rashba says in his Chuvos, in Chayel Gimel, Simen Shin Tzad Gimel, my perspective is that if there are clear witnesses and it's been clarified that somebody has committed something bad, wicked, then they're allowed to fine him with a monetary fine or give him a corporal punishment, according to what the Beis Din thinks appropriate. And this is part of Kiyum HaOlam, sustaining the world. Because if you put if everything you do precisely according to what the Torah sets out, and you're only going to punish according to what the Torah punishes, it's insufficient. We know that Rosh Hashanah has a sort of famous piece in which he says that the Torah's guidelines are meant to be religious law, and there's a whole, there has to be always a Din HaMelech, an entire body of secular law, which is necessary for accompanying it, which is the Kiyum HaOlam. And so he says, if you just suffice with what it says in the Torah, in Chazal, in the, then the people would break through the barriers of the world, and the world would be deathless. So he says, and we know the people, they've already fined people if they hit another person all over the world. And therefore, all the world, we judge, but here judge means really to much be proactive, to make offenses for the generation. And so we do in every generation and every place where we see that it's appropriate, we know, the Gemara says that Rav Huna once in Bavel, he, I don't know if it was before Sharia law, but he cut off the hand of a thief, because even though it was Bavel, and we don't do Knossos in Bavel, we don't do Malthus in Bavel, so certainly we shouldn't be cutting off hands, but it was a short Tzri Cholakas for the Tikkun HaMedina, and they did it, and it's proper. And then the Rashba adds, and Kal V'Chomer, it's okay, where there is governmental authority, meaning where the government gives us the authority to do these things, such as Rebbe Lezer, Rebbe Shimon, in the seventh paragraph of Bamatia, which is very interesting, because there Chazal were not so happy with Lezer, Rebbe Shimon, who was taking thieves and giving them to the government. But even though they weren't happy with him, nevertheless, halachically, obviously, he was permissible. So says Rabbi Yoshev. From the Rashba, we hear that things which have tikkun olam aspect, there is a koyach for chachmei Yisrael in every generation to set offenses and stand in the breach, even if there is no authority from the government. And he says that there is a ritva in Bava Tzia, which explains the Dina of the Mahusa, the authority of the government, is like the law of a king in Israel. But that's not for our purpose now, says Rabbi Yoshim, because if there's a tikkun olam involved, you don't need to have the authority of the law on your side. So therefore, says Rabbi Yoshim, even if there was no law against molesting minors, even if there was no such law, we could, on our own, if necessary, decide that this is worthy of Mesira, of giving over this individual to the governmental authorities. And this, we on our own, means Chachmei Yisrael every generation. So it's fascinating that Chachmei Yisrael, on the one hand, should not make a day to commemorate or an observance to commemorate the Holocaust, but on the other hand, they can and should do make sure that things which are Tikkun HaOlam are done and preserved and promoted. Rabbi Yashu concludes that there has to be some definite indication that the person was molesting. Otherwise, you're going to destroy somebody's life for naught. So then that would be a horrific thing. So you have to be very careful. That should be obvious. But in any event, once you do have definite indication, so then he says it is appropriate to give the person over to the governmental authorities. Those are the two things I wanted to see with tonight. Those are the ones which I found interesting, and there should be Ilu Nishmat, Rabbi Yoshim, now that we're in the Shiva, and his Ptira should be a schus for us and should protect us during this time of Tzaras. And we should be zeicha to see more and more of the light of his Torah and the Torah of other Gedolei Yisrael, and be zeicha by their light to the ultimate light in the Gula Shlema, Yehi Yameinu Amen. Okay, I think we'll finish Peter for tonight.
Rebecca, have you ever met Rabbi Yashav?